digging in the dirt. I'm digging in the dirt.
This is Digging in the Dirt with Kevin Gallagher, where Kevin and his guests dig a little deeper into today's issues surrounding the environment, farming, gardening, and food.
And my next guest here on Digging in the Dirt has been here a few times before. He's the executive director of Beyond Pesticides, an organization that is dedicated to getting us past the use of pesticides and, you know, a world free of toxic pesticides. Beyond Pesticides believes that people must have a voice in the decisions that affect them directly. They believe decisions should not be made for us by chemical companies or by decision makers who either do not have all the facts or refuse to even consider them. And Jay, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kevin. Good to be here.
Well, before we jump into what I told you I want to talk about, which is how much pesticides is on a lot of the popular fruits and vegetables that we eat, I thought I'd ask you what you thought, being a person who's, you know, been involved with, you know, trying to mitigate the use of pesticides over the years, what you thought when you saw President Trump sign the executive order allowing the use of chlorpyrifos and gave the pen to the president of Dow Chemical in the White House Oval Office.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's part of a trend, I guess, we're seeing now where corporations are in the driver's seat. Not all corporations, but unfortunately those that are polluters have a stronger voice. And as government weakens its hold through regulatory standards, obviously corporations are going to adopt standards that are weaker. And, you know, this doesn't happen by chance, of course. So these corporations are lobbying, as we know, lobbying government all the time, and they're really seeking to, they put it in terms of easing the burden or, you know, regulatory relief because regulations are too expensive. That's the context. But we know from experience that there are a lot of benefits, both economic and health, to a clean environment. We see that in states that have more rigorous standards governing the environment have better economies. So this connection between, you know, improved economic health and degradation of the environment or weaker environmental regulations really doesn't hold when you look at the facts. But, you know, what we're really seeing is, you know, this relationship between individual corporations that have influence, like DuPont, Dow, Syngenta, you know, all the companies. In this case, we're talking about Dow and chlorpyrifos, a chemical that the Obama administration had proposed to take off the market. It had been taken off the market for all residential uses back in 2000, and virtually all agricultural uses were left in force at that time as the government studied. So here we are 17 years later. We know the chemical causes brain damage in children at very low levels. It's a neurotoxic chemical, adversely affects the nervous system. And, yeah, there's a company that would lose its market share if this chemical were to be regulated, you know. But at the same time, the market is shifting toward organic materials, organic practices. And, you know, we're going to have to rely on forward-thinking corporations, lower-level elected officials. I mean, they're very important, so they'll... You know, when I say lower level, I'm talking state and local elected officials that have authority over pesticide use on public lands, and in some cases on private land, and people who are making decisions with their shopping habits, you know, and their decisions around their home. And, you know, we are ultimately the deciders when it comes to deciding what to eat, and this is a segue into your issue today about residues in our food. You know, we make the decision as consumers, right? We we have choices now in the marketplace, which we didn't have 10 years ago as to the extent we do now. So we act literally in terms of protecting our families and protecting our communities. We have that choice now with the availability of certified organic food in the marketplace.
That's what we talk about here a lot, you know, vote with your dollars, because it works. People, they start to notice.
Yeah, there's no question that the market, and this is true historically, it will be true over the next under the 4 years under this administration, that we have to be more vigilant in protecting ourselves, and we do that through our decisions in the marketplace. Now, that is not to say we do not need government. You know, we live in a world where chemicals know no boundaries. They invade our lives, whether we make a decision on behalf of our family or as individuals. Pesticides drift off the target site. They end up in waterways. They, you know, when I say drift, I'm not only talking about a neighbor who's spraying their property. I'm talking about transcontinental drift from, you know, the California agriculture all the way across the country, and agriculture coming up from Latin and South America, making its way all the way up to the North Pole. So we live in a global world. We all know that. And we need government to establish standards that are protective of health and the environment. But, you know, what we feed our children, what we feed our families, what is used on our lawns and playing fields, parks, around our schools, these are all decisions that we must get active on. And we're seeing this all across the country. People are realizing, look, if I don't go down to that county city council meeting, if I don't go to the school board meeting, talk to the principal, talk to the parks and rec department, you know, my kid's going to be poisoned when they go out and play on the playing field, because, you know, I can't rely on the federal government to regulate these chemicals as they ought to be regulated.
You know, it's a good point you make there, because to me it seems like now they're taking a different tactic. They're the fox is in the hen house, so to speak, and they're going to say it's okay to use this stuff. The government says it's okay to use this stuff, and it's such a slow poisoning that a lot of people don't realize they're being killed by these things slowly. And cancers are on the rise for canines and, you know, pets, and children get cancer because they're playing on lawns, for instance, which are covered with chemicals, and we don't realize it, you know. And then you have this executive action by the President of the United States, which directly benefits Dow. Dow president was ecstatic the day he was there and they made this waiver.
Yeah. No question. They're short-term, but they're direct benefits. I mean, I say short-term because, you know, these are decisions that have consequences, health consequences. And, you know, I was over talking to a conventional chemical supplier last week, and walk in there. You know, this is one of these big warehouses that sells product to farmers and to parks and, you know, other facilities that are managing open spaces or parkland. And I was there because we're working with municipalities that are transitioning to organic land management. And what we do is we set up pilot sites around the country with communities that are interested in making this transition. We bring in technical resources, and in some cases help to underwrite that transition. We do the training. We put a plan together. And we're talking about a systems change, or just like we do in agriculture. It's not like we're saying, you know, replace this chemical with this product. You know, we're not talking about a product swap. We're talking about a system that looks at soil very differently, looks at soil fertility, building microbial activity in the soil, biological life, and then cycling nutrients naturally. So instead of pouring synthetic nitrogen, phosphorus and potassium on a you know, an agricultural field or a garden or a playing field, you put in micronutrients, build up the, you know, the organic matter in the soil, and that then takes the natural nitrogen that is, you know, being put in the soil either through absorbing nitrogen or basically fixing nitrogen through the planting of certain plant material. In agriculture, it could be a nitrogen-fixing legume. You know, in a field or a park situation, it could be adding compost to the soil and then allowing the microbial activity to degrade or to break down that material, that insoluble nitrogen, into its soluble form. So this is all, you know, it's science-based stuff, right? But sometimes you want to add a material. And we allow inorganic, what we call organic compatible materials. And we just published a list of organic compatible materials on our website for land management in our parks and playing fields. So the point is you're not putting down something that either kills the microbial life or essentially feeds the plant directly through these materials that end up running off into our waterways, causing algae and clogging rivers and streams and killing the soil food web or the aquatic food web. So I walk into this, you know, what's basically a chemical distributor, chemical product distributor, and spent an hour talking to the guy about organic compatible products, of which he was very familiar with. You know, so I say that only to suggest that we're seeing a change. We're seeing that there's money to be made in products that are compatible with organic systems, products that facilitate this natural cycling of nutrients rather than kills the microbiology.
Yep.
And so, you know, that to me is analogous to what we're seeing in grocery stores. We're seeing certified organic products. We need to be vigilant about how we enforce those standards. We're seeing a lot of newspaper articles about, you know, violations that are out there. And sure, they're going to be violations, but the underlying system is incredibly sound. The systems change. We have an enforcement mechanism through USDA, which we don't have for any other chemical-intensive food production system. And they're going to be violators, and we need to make sure that we have a vigilant enforcement system. But the same thing is happening on the input side. So if I'm a gardener or a farmer or a park and rec director, I can now get products from these what used to be conventional, only sold chemical products, are now selling these products that are compatible with organic systems. So there's a lot of excitement out there. We just have to be vigilant. You know, we can't sit back and, as you say, you know, rely on, oh, it's registered by EPA, it must be safe. That's where we have to engage.
Right. They may just pass a law through their undue influence and change what the meaning of organic is or the meaning of a chemical is.
Well, that's really true. And that's where we're going to have to be extremely active.
Yeah, I always found it very interesting that the six major chemical companies have so much influence on our agriculture system and then hence our food. It's amazing that it's chemical companies that run our food system.
Yeah, and it's amazing that the farmers are getting most of their information from chemical salesmen. It used to be that we had a more extensive extension service, and in some states we still do. But in reality, most farmers are relying on the chemical industry when it comes to dealing with a pest. And, you know, the reality is the chemical companies put farmers on a treadmill. So if I'm a farmer growing corn, I'm going to probably be buying, the likelihood is I'm buying genetically engineered corn that is being sold as a package with Roundup, Monsanto's Roundup glyphosate herbicide. So what happens is I start using this stuff, and then eventually the weeds that I'm controlling become resistant, And I go back to the chemical guy and I say, what's going on here? You know, you told me this was the most productive way to grow corn, and yet the weeds are getting resistant to the chemical and I'm seeing a loss in productivity. And so then what happens is you go to your ag department, you go to your chemical guy, and they all look at each other and they go, well, I guess we're going to need an emergency exemption.
Right. We need to try this mix with DDT.
Right. So let's use this chemical that really isn't registered for use on corn because it'll probably work. In fact, it doesn't even have terrestrial uses like an triazine in the atrazine family, propazine. This is what, you know, the Texas Department of Agriculture told farmers of 3 million acres of genetically engineered corn. I'm sorry, of cotton. In this case, it was cotton. And said, you know, well, why don't you try this herbicide that's not registered for use on cotton, and we'll go and try and get an emergency exemption. Well, in that case, under the Obama administration, they denied the emergency exemption. But the likelihood is in the future, as this phenomenon continues, because it is quite predictable. That's why we don't really view this as an emergency. You know, this is a predictable biological effect, resistance building up in a weed species. It happens in insects as well, where you keep year after year monocultural crops, meaning we're planting the same thing year after year. We're seeing resistance in these insects and weeds. And it's quite predictable, but the way the industry gets around it is they urge the application of these emergency uses of unregistered pesticides. Now, heretofore, we have not seen them bringing back banned pesticides like DDT under that emergency program. But again, you know, as you know, Congress can change these laws.
And
the administration can try, and they may be successful in allowing, you know, chemicals that had been banned years ago and try to bring them back. I'm not saying I've seen that yet, but anything's possible when you've got an administration that believes it's above the law and doesn't believe in the need to protect the environment, pollinators, kids, you know, the ecosystem and everything we rely on for good health.
Everything's possible under an EPA headed by Scott Pruitt, who seems to be anti-Earth. you know, the health of people. He's just joining the petrochemical industry on every decision.
You know, you put your finger on it, you know, and you've got Dow in the White House celebrating, colluding with EPA on a decision that had been in the works for many years that is science-based. And, you know, science is not the highest priority. If a manufacturer of a chemical or, you know, the chemical industry goes into the White House and says we have an economic need, you know, that trumps public health and the environment,
mm-hmm.
both literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a sad day because EPA was established under the nation to be a science-based agency. I mean, it was to take the facts, excuse me, and apply that to decisions on toxic chemicals and, you know, impacts in our ecosystem on human health, and make these determinations in a fact-based world that engages science as a tool. And, you know, we basically have lost that, at least in the rhetoric and these early decisions. We, you know, we don't see the science. We don't see, you know, a real inclination to put as a priority public health and the environment. You know, to the contrary, we see that the economic issues, you know, and again, these are economic issues as articulated by those that have a vested interest. If you bring an economist in and ask the economist, you know, what's best for the sustainability of the economy? What's best in terms of growing a productive workforce? You know, what's best in terms of reduced morbidity and mortality and health, improved health. And how does that, what is the economic value of that improved health in terms of an economy? You get a totally different answer than when you ask the chemical company that produces the chemical that has a vested interest in that one chemical that is being regulated. And, you know, so you can talk about all you want how this is important for the economy and for jobs. But again, if you look at a green economy versus a fossil fuel-based economy, the growth sector is in the green economy. And the healthy sector, the healthy employees, the productive workforces are in the green economy. And we're not asking those questions right now. We're just talking, this administration is talking to the vested interests that clearly, you know, have an adverse or will see an adverse impact because they're invested in dirty technology, old technology, antiquated technology that has devastating impacts on human health and the environment.
We're talking to the executive director of Beyond Pesticides, Jay Feldman. He's also the co-founder of that organization. And as you can tell, he's one of the most knowledgeable men I know about this subject, pesticides and chemicals and the way you do things. I have to say, fair notice, I'm a salesman for organic amendments for the soil. Mm-hmm. I have a business. I do it. And I see the growth. We're growing. Yeah. And people want it. And they're changing. And it's a sea change. It's like a mindset that has to be changed that you know you can do it. If people don't believe it, come to my backyard and look at my organic garden. I produce incredible vegetables in a 20 by 20 plot, yeah, all done organically.
You shouldn't be shy. You know, obviously transparency is important, but we need business people in,
yes,
our community speaking up and saying, look, you know, we're not anti-business. Although the chemical industry would like to paint the environmental community as anti-business, it really isn't. I mean, it spawned the organic industry. The environmental community, working with progressive farmers and manufacturers, built the industry. So it was very pro-business in that sense. We always wanted to see an alternative in the marketplace, market-driven. We wanted people to have choices when they were voting with their dollars, as you say. And, you know, there's nothing anti-business about it. Is it an alternative model? Yeah, of course it's an alternative model. It's one that brings standards and values that are very different than a market-based economy that is based on pollution as opposed to enhancing and improving the environment.
Right, and I'm out there with farmers, and I don't care. We're not a company that worries about whether you're organic or not. We want to be the bridge company.
Yeah.
We want you,
yeah,
to move in that direction.
Yeah.
So we're never going to be condemning, or we're not going to call you out on if you want to use a pre-emergent to get rid of the weeds at the beginning of the season. You know, that's fine. Go for it.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's try to get you away from that practice,
yeah,
by building healthy soil, and that's the big talk amongst all farmers right
everybody.
Now is,
yes,
healthy soil. We've killed it with this. Everything, every time you pour chemicals on soil, whether it's farm or lawn, you're killing the biology.
Exactly. And you're right. This is the talk everywhere now. And, you know, even we call them conventional, chemical intensive farmers are adopting some of the practices of organic. One of the best examples is in apple production, pheromones. I mean, organic farmers have been using sex attractants to attract, insects that are unwanted in the orchard to a trap. So you attract the insect that you're targeting with that specific pheromone, and you trap the insect. Well, that's common use now across the whole industry, whether you're organic or conventional, and eliminated a lot of toxic spraying. Huge amounts of toxic sprays that were used in orchards. So, yeah, there are elements. But, you know, one thing I talk about a lot, I'm sure you do as well, especially if you're talking about the soil, is a systems change.
Yeah, absolutely.
Too often we see conventional people, whether we're talking agriculture or home garden or lawns or turf systems, who really are looking for a product swap. they say, okay, you don't want me to use this chemical, this herbicide, glyphosate or Roundup. What can I use? And what we're saying is, well, we can get to that, but let's first build your soil health so that you can have a more resilient plant, less stressed, less vulnerable to infestation disease. And then we'll see if we need some sort of product that you could use, you know, whether it's a, you know, it's an acid type product. If, you know, burnout is one that, you know, is a spot treatment for a weed, you know, so there are products out there that can be used. But the reality is, once you adopt with, you know, good soil management practices, a system that relies on soil health, you find a lot of these problems, both insect and weed problems, just disappear.
It's true.
You know, they just go away.
And it maintains itself, too.
That's right. You know, it does take time. You mentioned the transition, and bridge products are important to make that transition. In organic, you know, in certified organic, we have a 3-year transition period. So, you know, you've got to make that transition with organic compatible products. But there are synthetic products that are allowed in those systems. So, you know, the tools are there. The question is, how do we, you know, facilitate and expedite this change on a timetable that, you know, meets these pressing large environmental problems? And I need to mention, of course, that with all this soil building that you're involved with and others are, it's so incredibly important that we think of the soil as sequestering carbon, or understand the value and the role that,
that's another aspect
that it plays. So yes, we think about our families in terms of residues of pesticides, but we also are now all aware of global climate change, and you know, we're doing the earth an incredible favor, and not just for the earth, but for ourselves as reliant on a healthy earth, when we manage the soil in ways that build the organic matter and sequester carbon. When we think about, right, we think about soil, dark, beautiful, earthy soil, you know, that's soil with carbon in it. And, you know, we're literally sequestering atmospheric carbon in an organic system to a much higher degree than we do in a chemical-intensive system where we don't have a high degree of organic matter.
Right, the way the system is meant to do it. Hey, you know, Jay, I really wanted to talk about the fruits and vegetables residues, so we should switch a little bit here, because I did tell everybody we're going to talk about it. I think it's very important, because the reason I do this show is to start people thinking about these ideas, and then, because I don't believe we have as much control over the political situation anymore, so we have to do it on the local situation, and that means like voting with your dollars or changing your eating habits or growing some vegetables or whatever. So I like people to understand that there is a problem out there with what we're buying at the supermarket. And I have a list here. It was by another group called the Environmental Working Group.
Yeah.
They have a shopper's guide to pesticides and produce. And let's talk about the dirty 12. They start with number one, I understand, is definitely the worst, is strawberries. Then you have spinach, nectarines, apples. Always found them to be number one before. Six was pears. Seven is cherries. Eight is grapes. Nine is celery. Then tomatoes. Sweet bell peppers are 11. And then potatoes are 12. So let's talk about, how do they get to be dirty 12? What's on these vegetables that people should be aware of? And what should we do about, you know, at least starting to limit them if you're not buying organic?
Yeah, I mean, this is based on the amount of residues that are found on the product and the kinds of chemicals that are found. So you mentioned chlorpyrifos earlier. Strawberries, methyl bromide is widely used, and it's, you know, methyl bromide is a gas that has detrimental effects on the ozone, and a greenhouse gas that elevates global climate change. So, you know, and you can go down the list. These are chemicals that are known to have a range of effects, whether we're talking about cancer, neurotoxic effects, immune system damage, reproductive, you know, effects. And they're chemicals that have been identified, or I should say products that are associated with chemicals that have been identified by USDA, which does a market basket survey, or has up until now done a market basket survey where they show residues of these materials on the finished product. So it is based on the actual residues that we see on our food. It doesn't have as much to do with how the food is grown. So, you know, you take strawberries, for instance, 300 pounds per acre of chemicals used in its production versus corn, which is about 5, and soybeans less than that. So you can see, by the way, home lawns are up in the area of 6 to 9 pounds per acre if you follow the bag recommendations. So, you know, there's this question of what's on our food, you know, what are the residues, and that's how this list or the Dirty Dozen are established in terms of the danger of the chemicals and the finding of residues on the finished food commodity. You know, we started a page on our website called Eating with a Conscience because often some of the chemicals that we are concerned about don't show up on that Dirty Dozen list because they don't end up being residues in the finished food commodity, or we don't know as much about that pesticide yet as we should, even though it's found on our food. So, you know, a lot of these neonicotinoids, for instance, which are showing up in the environment and associated with bees, don't typically make the list, but as we learn more about the chemicals and their adverse effects, you know, they're raising serious concerns.
So why should a consumer be worried about this? For instance, let's say somebody likes spinach salads, right? And you go to the supermarket, yeah, and there's a 3 times washed bag of spinach. Are you telling me that that bag of spinach has a chemical on it that is not gone when they go to take it home and eat it?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, EPA sets what they call tolerances, and these tolerances allow for residues on the finished commodity. So when I say finished, that means what we're ingesting, you know, what we're ingesting as on the dinner plate on our tables. So, yes, we allow these residues, and then EPA, through risk assessment, calculates an acceptable risk. Now, under a law called the Food Quality Protection Act, the agency is supposed to aggregate that risk from spinach and the residues of the chemicals that are on that finished food commodity with other exposures that we get through other foods. And the EPA has set up what they call a risk cup. So they calculate, again, based on an acceptable rate of disease, and that's, you know, open to anybody's judgment.
Unless, you know, it's your child, right?
Yeah, it's your child. But also, you know, we don't really study all the endpoints. I mean, we're not fully evaluating endocrine-disrupting chemicals, which even at minute levels in our food are causing, you know, dramatic impacts. You know, affect the endocrine system, and you can cause cancer and all kinds of effects later in life, reproductive effects. And so, you know, we basically are in a situation where there are gaps, there are differences. Not everybody fits within the average. You may be an avid gardener and exposed to those chemicals in your garden. You may have a neighbor who sprays these chemicals, and you are exposed as a result of off-target drift through inhalation or dermal absorption. It gets on your skin, dermal absorption. So the ultimate decision on a risk assessment assumes, exposure levels that may not actually be true, not to mention that pre-existing conditions, you may be suffering a disease yourself. You know, you may have cancer or be recovering from a disease, and therefore you have an elevated risk factor given that exposure. So, you know, EPA, even under the best of circumstances, if you happen to be of average body weight, average health, or good health, and you're not exposed through other means, you know, meaning, through your own behavior, your own employment, where you go to school, what they happen to use in the school that you're attending or your kid's attending, you know, all these factors come together under an EPA risk assessment, and you see a lot of gaps. And you see either misinformation or no information on a lot of these exposure patterns and the potential resulting adverse effect. So whenever you see these Dirty Dozen, you're looking just at the food residue component. That's of concern, but you know, recently the Canada and USDA a couple years ago looked at across the board at crops that have residues, and they're finding about 30% of the food supply has residues of pesticides, one or more in them. The USDA study found over 1% of the food had residues of pesticides that were not registered for use on that food commodity. So, again, there's a complexity to this that is driving us to advocate even more strongly than ever for organic production, and we urge people to buy at least for those foods that their children eat a lot of, or you as a consumer eat a lot of, buy that food or that, you know, it can be a liquid, it can be a beverage, it can be,
right,
you know, any type of food group, whatever you eat most of, try to buy that organic.
Yeah, my wife is a health professional, and she says, you know, if you're going to start anywhere, start with your dairies, your cheeses, things with fats. They retain a lot more chemicals in them, and so she recommends that to
people. Yeah, but again, if you're not a big milk drinker or cheese, start with what you eat most of.
Right.
You know, you can, you know, and that, it depends if you want to be an environmental consumer or a health consumer. You can be both. You know, as an environmental consumer, you're looking at the whole environment and your contribution to adverse impacts on health and the environment. So you're saying, I understand onions don't have a lot of residues, or at least haven't up until now. As we move into these systemic pesticides, which are chemicals that are absorbed through the roots and end up moving through the vascular system of the plant and then get absorbed into the tissue of the plant, if as we move into more and more of those types of pesticides, our thinking about residues are going to change, because typically we thought, okay, if you peel the onion, you're not getting that residue on the outer part of the crop. You're not eating it. You're peeling it off and disposing of it or composting it. And, you know, so let's not worry about onion ingestion. Well, the reality is there are over 50 different chemicals registered for use, and if I'm living in California or the Hudson Valley in New York where onions are grown, you know, I might be concerned about the chemical-intensive nature of those crops.
Sure.
And the impact they're having not only in our community that is growing the crop, but neighboring communities. So that's the environmental consumer, concerned about the contribution that we are making through our food choices to protection of the environment. As a health consumer, yes, I can sort of parse through all these issues, identify those crops that you listed, and try to buy those as certified organic crops, or go down to your farmer's market and find the farmer who's growing organically and buy that buy that.
That's one of the solutions is to grow your own or find a farmer who does grow and assures you he's doing it in a way. There's a thing called a pledge farmer, and it might not be certified, but they pledge that they're not using toxic ingredients on their stuff. But, you know, Jay, in the end, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. Like, we hear the studies about beer and wine has glyphosate in it, and that almost everybody has glyphosate in them now, it seems. Yes. You know, it's so widely used, and that we're beyond that point. It might be that we don't even have organic anything anymore. It's less
But the only way we're going to move in that direction is if we take these chemicals out of production by moving toward organic. Organic is a systems-based certification. There is a limit on off-target drift. And, you know, if you visit an organic farm, it's astounding to see how much land has to be taken out of production to protect against neighbors' use of a pesticide by creating a buffer zone.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I visited a farm recently. 10% of their land is put into buffers, which does not qualify, has to be managed organically, but does not qualify for certification because of the neighbor's use of the pesticide.
Drifted over.
So, you know, we, again, as environmental consumers, we are helping to transition the market away from the chemicals. So even if there is some drift, first of all, it's going to be less chemical.
Right.
It has to be, it cannot be more than 10% of tolerance. And so, you know, we right there, we're enjoying a benefit, both in terms of reduced residue in the crop and in terms of, you know, the impact we're having on the earth. Now, the studies, you know, show that people that are on an organic diet versus a conventional diet are enjoying health benefits. I mean, they have lower residues in their body. There's a study that Harvard did on sperm counts, higher sperm counts, lower sperm counts in a conventional diet. I mean, these are real effects. Real health effects.
Yep.
Less
is better.
We've been doing litigation recently on the natural label. We've been suing companies that use the word natural on their labeling because we recently sued Mott's applesauce because, you know, they're buying apples that are treated with neonicotinoids and they're putting natural on the label. We sued Monsanto for putting a claim on their Roundup product that it has no effect on human biology, when, in fact, it has dramatic effects on the gut biome and bacteria in the human body that are necessary for normal functioning and contribute to, you know, the destruction of these beneficial bacteria in the human body. Contribute to all kinds of diseases, 21st century diseases, especially nervous system diseases and immune system diseases.
Well, thank God that you're there. We're talking to Jay Feldman of BeyondPesticides.org. You can go there and see his site. It is loaded. I mean, you can get a complete list of pesticides there. You can get health effects, environmental effects. If you want a good resource, BeyondPesticides.org is a really good one. And the shopping list I mentioned before was from Environmental Working Group, EWG, Shopper's Guide to Pesticides and Produce. There's lots of resources on that site also. So if our listeners want to, they can go to those things. Jay, I don't think we scratched the surface, tell you the truth.
Well, we should talk more.
Yes.
I appreciate what you're doing, Kevin, and all your work. And you know, it, as they say, it takes a village. You know, everybody has a role to play. It's just people, I think, are recognizing they need to get more active than they have been. I know it's tough. Parents are busy, you know, raising kids, families, And it really requires us getting out there and getting active on all these issues.
Yeah, I have a brand new grandson, and I talked to my daughter, and they're concerned too. They're new parents, and we're seeing here is serious stuff. And in the developmental stage of a baby, when these chemicals are serious, and if you allow your landscaper, you don't talk to your landscaper, you're making a big mistake, because they just come once a week, and you don't even know it. They say, oh, the schedule says lay down this pre-emergent weed killer, which is a serious chemical. And when they do that, they put those little yellow signs that say stay off for a day or 2 days, and then you can go on it. Well, that's not the truth. You cannot go on it. It's there for quite a long time. So this is up to the consumer, and if you need, you know, places like Beyond Pesticides are at the forefront of helping us change some things. We're talking to Jay Feldman of beyondpesticides.org. Thanks very much for coming on, Jay.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Kevin.
Okay, take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Digging in the dirt. Digging in the dirt.
You've been listening to Digging in the Dirt with Kevin Gallagher.